Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of Season 6 of the Burgess Salmon Pensions Pod. I'm Chris Brown, a partner in Burgess Salmon's Pensions and Lifetime Savings team, and I am as shocked as anyone to find out that I am recording my 31st podcast episode. The Pensions Pod is into its 6th season and its 4th year. Now, we've covered some really interesting topics over the last 5 seasons. We've looked at, well, Season 5 looked at the Regulator's Covenants Guidance, ESG issues, fiduciary management assessment and investment in private markets. So a really wide range of things. And Season 6 is going to look at some interesting stuff such as CDC, return of DB surplus reform, questions about policy, so adequacy, investment mandation, employee engagement and decumulation in DC savings. So loads on the agenda for the new series. And if you're listening to this and would like something covered, then do please let us know. The pensions world is always changing, so there's always something new to talk about and lots to discuss. But for our first episode of Season 6, I would like to introduce our guests, both of whom work with me here at Burgess Salmon. So welcome to Richard Pettit. Richard, hi. Can you tell us who you are and something about the work you do, please?
Yes, of course, Chris. So, as you said, I am Richard Pettit. I'm a partner in our pensions and lifetime savings team. This September, I came of age at Burgess Salmon, so 21 years at Burgess Salmon.
Congratulations.
Thank you. 10 years as a partner. We're all, as everyone is in the industry, busy at the moment. So I'm doing quite a lot of de-risking, again, like a lot of people in the market, as well as supporting a whole range of schemes and employers on business as usual, and a few interesting projects addressing things like historic benefit and documentation issues, some of which we'll talk about later.
Yes, super. Thanks very much. And welcome to episode 1 of Season 6. And we are joined by Eleanor O'Leary. Eleanor, hi. Tell us who you are and the type of work you do.
So, yeah, I'm Eleanor O'Leary. I'm a senior associate in the Pensions and Lifetime Savings team. So really, I'm advising trustees and scheme employers on a wide range of pensions legal issues. Particular focus on at the moment is advising schemes with complex legal and benefit issues. And I work very closely with Richard on a number of those and on benefit and documentation review projects, which we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, brilliant. So welcome to episode 1. And that's a really nice segue then into the subject matter of this podcast episode. So you both do a lot of benefit and documentation audit work, but what are we talking about when we mean benefit and documentation audit work?
Great question, obviously, as ever, Chris. I'm assuming everyone listening to the podcast is going to be aware and conversant with what a benefit specification is that schemes will often do while they're running on or to get ready for de-risking, sort of buy-in or buy-out, so which does what it says on the tin. It's a list of the scheme's benefits checked against scheme rules, including historic rules. What we're talking about when we say benefit audit and documentation review, it's something slightly different that supports and builds on a traditional benefit specification. It's rather than just taking your rules at face value and assuming that they're valid and that everything works when doing a benefit specification, it's doing some testing to check that everything is all in order and correct. So making sure that the deeds are validly executed and could have been executed and could amend the scheme in that way, the basic sort of starting position. A few things like looking at amendment power fetters as well. And obviously a lot of people in the industry have come across Section 37 issues recently. So it's flushing out and resolving things like that. I'm assuming that for the chat today, the first few questions in everyone's mind, which are the same with most things, are what are we talking about? So what is this? And what's benefit documentation audit review? Why should I do one if I'm a trustee, or if I'm an employer, why do I think my trustees should do something? Why do I need to do it now rather than just leaving it till later? And if I do one, what's the outcome going to be? Is it going to cause me problems, or are there going to be sensible solutions? So that's the kind of thing, if it works for you, we'd like to sort of chat through today.
Yeah, absolutely makes sense to me. And that was going to be my first question. So, Eleanor, why would you do a benefit and documentation review to supplement a benefit specification? Why would you do one of those reviews?
Yeah, so there are a number of reasons, really. So I think the starting position, you know, as we all know, trustees are under a duty to pay the correct benefits.
Yeah.
And obviously, they've always got that duty. But if a material issue does come to light, then really they should be looking into that. And so undertaking the benefit and documentation review can give trustees the comfort that they are paying those correct benefits. Often we also see when new scheme administrators are appointed, scheme admin comes under a bit of scrutiny, and we also see that that often triggers these kind of reviews as well.
Yeah, and I think all of it comes back to, you want as trustees, you want to be confident that you're administering the correct benefits and you're running the scheme correctly. And to do all of that, you can only do it if you're clear on the governing documentation, how that fits in with things like a benefit specification and how you run the scheme. And there are a number of triggers for looking at that specifically. So we've also seen all the examples Eleanor mentioned, but we've also seen where a new professional trustee comes in, or someone new in management comes in, new chair of the board, new FD comes in, just wanting to double check and be confident that you are where you think you are with the scheme. And again, it's all about trying to, if there's going to be a problem in a scheme, flush it out now when it's easier to deal with, which is coming on to another question we'll deal with later, and flushing out and resolving it sort of early on, really.
Yeah, okay. And I suppose you can see why trustees and employer would want to, you know, have that confidence that the benefits in the scheme that are being administered are the correct benefits from the scheme. And it feeds into employer points as well. Suppose there's a surplus in the scheme. You know, is there really a surplus in the scheme? Could be a question. So an employer would be interested too. But Richard, yes. That's sort of, is there a duty, you know, for trustees to turn over every stone or to go looking for problems? How would you characterise that duty to have confidence and to understand what the benefits in the scheme are?
I think it's almost exactly what you said, Chris, which is it's a duty to be confident in what you're doing. So, but it's really important to be clear, there is absolutely not a duty to investigate everything to the nth degree. And I firmly believe that with any scheme, however good the documentation is and however well run it is, if you got a good team of lawyers like us to look into it hard enough, you could find a problem, because there's always something where a technical box won't have been ticked, an I dotted or a T crossed, and there's certain things, you know, it would be rare for it to be reasonable to dig into, like authority for people signing documents, whether people are properly appointed directors. And sometimes it's necessary, but in most cases it's not. So the most important thing for any work we do like this, it's all about scoping. We would never go in just with a blank sheet of paper saying, right, we're going to look and try and find every problem. You agree with your client, whether it's employer or trustee, the context, and say, this is what we're going to do, so that you've got a reasonable level of confidence. And the reason we suggest our trustees would want to carry out some kind of review in, as you mentioned, the context of surplus or de-risking, is to cover off the material risk, which is that you go on and run your scheme, don't investigate something until you get to a stage in 10 years' time or 11 years' time, whenever, and you do investigate for some reason because you're giving a warranty on a buy-in or whatever, and the issue comes out as much more difficult to resolve. But absolutely no, it's all a question of, as you said, Chris, confidence and setting that level. Sometimes there will be occasions where that confidence is shown to be misplaced. So if you've got examples of things having gone wrong in your scheme, you might test those areas in more detail.
Yeah, okay, that's helpful and makes sense. So it's about having confidence in the benefits payable from the scheme. Eleanor, sort of, are there specific reasons why you might carry out an audit and a benefit audit and documentation review, you know, in addition to just generally it being a sensible thing to do in order to have that confidence?
Yeah, there are a number of other examples in addition to those we've already touched on. So, for example, big projects such as GMP equalisation or kind of connecting to the pensions dashboards, which obviously lots of schemes are doing those kind of projects at the moment. As you said, Chris, it's really important to have confidence in the data and in the underlying legal position for the scheme. So undertaking this kind of review before those projects are done or in conjunction with them is really helpful, because before you spend all that time and money, you want to know that you're not doing these projects based on, you know, foundations of sand, really. And another things we often see is, from an employer's perspective, if they're involved in M&A activity or other kind of corporate transactions, then inevitably the pension scheme is subject to due diligence, and the employer will want confidence in the information they're given in relation to the pension scheme's accurate. So again, this kind of review can assist with that, to give them that confidence. But also, if any issues are identified, the sooner they are, they can kind of be dealt with, and hopefully then not hold up any transaction or allow for any issues to be kind of costed in. So yeah, there's a number of other reasons, even in addition to those which we haven't touched on today, but they're just a few of why trustees and employers might want to do this kind of review.
Yeah, and just to add to that, I think those are really good examples, as Eleanor said. But it's if you take it all together, there are lots of reasons for doing the investigation and resolving them early, because otherwise it's going to cost more to sort things out later. And as Eleanor said, you can cause delays at the worst possible time. We've talked about it earlier on the podcast, but the context, as you mentioned earlier, Chris, of surplus and running schemes on is potentially, I think, going to give rise to trustees wanting greater confidence, both in employer covenant, which is an entirely separate issue, if you're running on, but also in your comparing when you want to run on for surplus, can the covenant of the employer and your scheme funding support benefits in the future? And you need to be sure about covenant, but you also need to be sure about what those benefits are, which means being sure of the docs. Again, it all comes back to the same kind of thing, really.
Yeah. Okay. That's really helpful. And I'll ask you in a minute about the sort of process of, you know, practically the process you go through on a type of review. So I suppose I was wondering in a corporate transaction situation, whether an audit and review could, say, focus on key risk areas. So, you know, big things that are known to be potential red flags in DB pension schemes over the years, like a Barber equalization, say, or closure or particular increase provisions. But I'll ask you about that in a minute. I suppose, Eleanor, is it better to undertake a review sooner rather than later? I suppose it is. What would you say?
Yeah, I think, you know, from my views, definitely it's better to undertake that review sooner rather than later. So we've already touched on, for example, the last thing you really want is for your scheme to get to buyout, where you're looking to secure benefits with an insurer, and then an issue comes to light derailing the whole project. So, you know, that's one example, but also just really from a practical perspective, if you look into things now, if an issue is identified, then it's often more straightforward to deal with, because evidence is available. People's recollections will be much better now if you speak to them now than in 20 years' time, say. So just from a practical perspective, right, the sooner you do, and if there are issues, really, this is the better, in my view.
And Richard, I mean, this type of review I assume is looking for pragmatic ways to resolve any potential issues, and, you know, not going out of a way to look to two people, but it helps if there is a liability question around potential claims to identify issues early.
Yeah, I think everything point, you know, claims against former advisors are obviously an asset of the scheme, and trustees are under a duty to investigate, but all of this really is, yeah, focused on the practicality. So yes, possibly there might be a claim that can help fund corrective action or investigations, and it's more likely to be in time if you look at it earlier. But there are a whole host of practical reasons as well for looking at things early. As Eleanor said, you've got document and data destruction and retention policies, people's memories, as Eleanor said. I mean, I find it difficult to think of circumstances where these kind of issues don't get worse and more difficult to resolve, particularly if you end up correcting benefits with the passage of time.
And actually, if a client is thinking about wanting to get that confidence and certainty over the benefits in their scheme, there is a practical point that that work will necessarily need to be done. If there's doubt, it would necessarily need to be done as part of a risk transfer project. So actually, doing an audit before a risk transfer project isn't duplicating work. It's more just sort of moving work forward or front end loading it.
I think that's it. I think it's about getting a scheme in a much better position to move quickly for de-risking. And obviously, we've seen a number of schemes recently want to move quickly across a variety of sizes to take advantage of opportunities in the market. And yeah, there's a risk that if something comes out, it's again a timing issue Eleanor was talking about earlier. If you suddenly trip over the last minute because you uncover an issue, that can lose your opportunity in the market. As you say, Chris, a lot of this work would need to be done when you're getting to the final de-risking stage anyway. And particularly, I suppose, more of it if trustees were exploring residual risk, which I suppose we're expecting to see become an option for a greater range of schemes with the new entrants into the insurance market. And again, it's something you would need to just be clear, because there will have to be an audit and due diligence process in relation to that residual risk insurance, which would cover a lot, if not all, of this.
Yeah, understood. Okay, that's really helpful. So I suppose the question is, what approach would you take practically? What would the process look like for a client who was speaking to us about reviewing benefits and auditing documents? What does that look like?
Typical lawyer's answer for me, Chris, it varies. It depends on the client. But there's a serious point there. So there's definitely no one size fits all. As I mentioned earlier, it's all really about scope.
Yeah.
And that will be driven by a few factors. So one is the level of confidence that you as trustees or the employer want. So how far do you want to go in checking things? Another thing is, the second one is, what areas of concern do you have? So if you've got a deed, you've come across in a scheme that hasn't been signed properly, you become more concerned, and then it becomes to be more likely an onus on you as trustees to investigate what happened when similar people were in place for other deeds. Could a similar issue have happened? But the other is, sorry, Chris.
Well, I was just going to jump in. So that's interesting, isn't it? Because that is, so there's no duty to go picking up stones and looking for issues. But if you become aware of a potential issue, then there is a duty to investigate a potential issue to some degree, would you say?
Yeah. And again, I think it varies on your risk appetite.
Yes.
As an employer, and also very specifically on the circumstances, because there could be,
yes,
there's lots of reasons where something could have been messed up for a specific reason, and it doesn't suggest that there's a systemic issue. And again, you trustees might take a view on that. Some of it, as well as scope, will be led by a point you mentioned you were going to ask me about, so I'm probably jumping ahead of your question.
Yeah, no,
focusing in on the red flags. So yeah, exactly as you said earlier, as you would do if you were looking just at benefit issues in a scheme, you'd focus on areas which are likely to have the biggest financial impact for everyone, and also, to be frank, areas where issues most likely arise. So as you've said, it's things like equalisation, so barber window issues, closures to accrual, anything to do with increases or revaluation. And yes, absolutely, in the same way as you would do on a benefit specification, benefit audit on this, you might focus in on a few key deeds where they're likely to make a difference. Because it is the point, in some of the work we've done for some clients, you will come across a whole host of deeds that are invalid, but easily half of them, it doesn't actually make any difference to liabilities, because you've got things like deeds changing a scheme name, or you've got deeds which were thought to be very important at the time, like retaining the old pre-A-day inland revenue limits. But if you look into the facts on the scheme and find out that no one was above those limits, you've got no financial impact, then it's very low impact. So a lot of it, again, is making sure you don't do legal work that's only of academic interest. So you might only zoom in on deeds where you know there would be a financial impact either way.
Yeah, understood. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, so maybe you can focus your review, and perhaps if you become aware of an issue, maybe then what we're saying is there's no duty necessarily to investigate similar circumstances, but if you're aware of a potential issue, there's a duty to consider the approach to that. Okay, so Eleanor, what about potential outcomes? So a client does a review of past benefits and documentation. What might be the outcomes of that type of review?
Yeah, Chris, so it could be that no issues are identified and the scheme's got a clean bill of health. And, you know, of course, that is the outcome that everyone is hoping for.
Is looking for.
Yeah, and then, you know, trustees can move forward and with confidence into those projects and transactions and things like that. So I'd say that's probably the best case scenario. And then another potential outcome really is that some potential issues are identified, but as Richard's just said, they turn out to potentially be easily resolved or immaterial. The examples Richard gave were, you know, you look into it and then the deeds, no one was anywhere near the kind of inland revenue limits and the things like that. And then I suppose you've got the worst case scenario situation, which is where you identify an issue, you know, it looks like it could be potentially material. So further investigations and remedial action is required. But as we've just been discussing, if that is the circumstances, then scope is really key here, because as Richard and you have just said, you know, depending on the scope of the investigation, you can make that quite tight. So you're just looking at very specific things. And often that will allow a more pragmatic and proportionate approach, depending again on the scheme circumstances and risk appetite and things like that.
Yeah. And Richard, we've got a lot of experience of assisting with a wide range of different reviews and different scopes of review.
Yeah, exactly. So it, as you say, it ranges massively. We talked about the areas where people might focus a review, and it does, it all varies according to, you know, what you find in the documents, but also, as I said, risk appetite, the degree of certainty you want. It's definitely not the case that you have to investigate everything, and I, as I strongly believe, that trustees are not under duty to investigate everything. And we've obviously a lot of trustees have come across this quite recently, looking at Section 37 reviews before we had the 5th of June announcement from the government around legislating to allow retrospective actuarial confirmations. And I think it's a lot of experience for a lot of trustees there on deciding only to investigate to a certain degree and then wait and see. Mm-hmm. That's an example of a pragmatic approach. There can be other areas where, as Eleanor said, something is a moot point practically in the scheme, or it's low risk or low impact. Sometimes you can, I mean, one of the obvious things you can do if a major issue comes up, and one obvious reason for dealing with things quickly, is you can cap off. There can still be issues that are potentially running. You can have schemes that are still open with barber windows. You can have schemes that everyone thinks is closed to accrual, but might not be. And bad as the impact might be, if you've got a scheme that's been open to accrual for 5 or 10 years, longer than you think, it'd be a lot worse if you don't take immediate action to close that window. And hopefully, and often is the case, you get comfortable that you can resolve the underlying issue and you don't have a window, but it's much better to close it. We've seen various deeds to resolve issues, sometimes action supported by an indemnity from an employer to allow a pragmatic approach where it's reasonable to do so.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of sensible solutions that trustees can put in place.
Okay, so just in one sentence reply then to, I think you've covered it there, but in one sentence to reply to the three questions that you asked yourself at the top of the podcast then. So we've talked about doing a benefit audit and documentation review. Why should trustees and employers want to consider doing one?
So you can be confident in the benefits you're paying, the way you're running your scheme, and if you buy out, securing the correct level of benefits.
Perfect. Why should trustees and employers consider doing one and not putting it off?
Because it avoids problems getting worse, and they'll be easier, quicker, and cheaper to resolve earlier.
Perfect. And lastly, what's the potential outcomes, or what are the potential outcomes from such a review?
Two extremes are, one, you get a clean bill of health. To the other extreme, you have a potentially material problem, but there are lots of things you can do to mitigate that problem. And again, it will always be better than finding out that issue later.
Better to know about it. Yeah, brilliant. Okay, well, thank you very much, Richard and Eleanor. That's an interesting topic to kick off season 6, and I think will be relevant to all trustees and employers of defined benefit schemes. So great topic to kick off with, and great to be chatting again on the Burgess Salmon Pensions Pod. So to all our listeners, if you would like to know more about our pensions and lifetime savings team and how our experts can work with you, then you can contact myself, Chris Brown, or any of our team via our website. And as we say every episode, all of our previous episodes are available on Apple, Spotify, our website, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. So don't forget to subscribe, and thanks for listening.